All right, everyone. Welcome to Cold-Blooded Conversations. I am your host, Nathan, and today we are going to continue our conversation with Jim Harrison and Kristen Wiley, the owners and operators of the Kentucky Reptile Zoo. So with all the places you've been, all the things you've done, and all the projects you've been involved in, can you pick something that you are most proud of and feel has contributed the most to the industry?
I don't know if any of those things I feel like are finished. we've been lucky enough to be involved in some projects overseas and here that I think the most exciting things we've done. So one is our work in St. Lucia, with the Fair to Lance, though, again, it's still in progress. I don't really feel like I've done a lot now, but they've got a UN project going on, that exists. It's a UN program to essentially help developing countries utilize their own natural resources, and kind of keep control of them. And this is the first time.
Is that in accordance with the WHO?
This is separate from WHO. This is the thing that most people have probably heard of are called the Kyoto Protocols, which is a set of guidelines for using natural resources or selling natural resources outside of a country. So I'm involved in that, but I haven't done a lot yet. Hopefully that'll be getting going this year though. And I have to say, like, they're great. I feel like their conservation people there are really
trying
on top of the things, and yeah, they're really trying and they really have a good understanding. I mean, that's not surprising. None of it is really surprising, but it's just humbling, I think, because I don't want to sound like, oh, I'm going there to fix this. I'm just happy to be involved in it. And then the second thing would be Sri Lanka, which has stalled a little bit, but hasn't totally stopped, which that's the antivenom project there. And then just in India, just a few months ago, or last month, whatever that was, it looks like I may be assisting in doing some consulting with setting up regional venom production centers in India. You may be aware that we just talked about geographic variation in both crops. So geographic variation happens in many species of snakes, for people who may not realize. And most of the venom that's used to make antivenom in India comes from the southern part of India. And they are now working to remedy that by having more regional production centers. So that way, if you live in the, you know, northwestern part of India, the snakes used to make antivenom for you will be from that same region, and hopefully the antivenom will work much better. So I'm pretty excited about that.
That's why she was in India, was she was speaking at a conference.
Yeah, there was a conference, and then I actually went to visit. There's one that's already been established. There's obviously, again, I'm hardly the only person involved with this. So there's been people, doing those things and starting those regional centers already. And so I was visiting one of those as well. And it was really great. I hope I can at least be somewhat useful.
That is really awesome. And I'm sure just a really awesome thing to be able to experience.
Yeah, for sure. Terrific. For sure. The other thing that Jim's wanting me to say is some of our snakes are are part of a project now that's run by a company in Ireland called Celtic Biotech. And they have developed a drug for non-small cell lung cancer from the South American rattlesnake venom. And so our snakes are the primary source of that venom, at least thus far. So that's really cool. They actually got a bunch of funding through the European Union, through a cancer program that they have, and some kind of, startup drug seed money type of thing. So they've been able to really kind of start get going with that. So that's a really cool thing too.
You mentioned the World Health Organization. She's actually on the snake bite advisory board, but they haven't done a whole lot.
I haven't done much.
She filled
out a survey.
Yeah. Well, they're going slowly because they were, they, She got on there during the pandemic.
Yeah, it started like I think I got the email that they had, put me on at the advisory panel or whatever they call it, and then like the next month was COVID. So yeah, I mean, some of the stuff in India is part of that WHO initiative.
And we're
So
also, one of the things I'm proud of is I wanted to get to the point where we didn't have to use snakes. And we're working with people to put ourselves out of business by doing stuff with DNA and genome projects and synthetic stuff. And there's all kinds of stuff coming down the line. And eventually, you'll only need small samples of venom, which will mean then, there'll be less re risk and you won't have as many animals you'll need to have around. So those all lessen the risks for everybody involved. But also, science has to be science. I mean, you have to be able to replicate it. And sometimes when you get different locations of animals, you found something that works, and I don't have it anymore because those bloodlines either breed out or you're not getting the same locale. So you have to be very careful. But right now, the crototoxin and Torificus and Durisus, all the Durisus complex, is very much being used in cancer research.
So, how many entities are you familiar of that are still doing it the old way as opposed to synthetically nowadays?
Oh, everyone is not doing
Everybody,
it
not synthetic.
synthetically. Yeah, the synthetic stuff is currently really only happening on laboratory scale stuff. So most notably, the University of Liverpool, their snake lab there, like that's Nick Casewell, that in his lab, I believe, is the one that did the first one. But there's a few other either companies or people at universities who are working on like the organelle or no, excuse me, organoid development. So that, and then there's some other people who are looking at making antivenoms that are using like molecular technology to make antivenoms, and not directly, it's not like venom put into a horse. They're taking antibodies from human bite survivors, that are volunteering their blood, and then replicating those antibodies. So none of that is on a production scale at this point. But
Have we started trials?
no.
No.
No, this is all just stuff that's like in a petri dish at this point.
But things are moving
But
extremely fast for science.
yeah,
For the
it
scientific.
really is,
I mean,
yeah.
years, as long as I've been in this, the smart people are moving so fast now that we have more technology. That's also why we know there's differences in the venoms in geographic areas. I mean, there used to be the thing where everybody thought Helleri was, the same everywhere, and it's not. But we also knew, Dr. Minton knew that because he had some papers that I have that before anybody else knew about it, he knew about the neurotoxicity in Helleri. And so he reported that when they were talking about when, who was it? Strait and them were coming up with the new antivenom, Strait and Glenn, he suggested that they use Helleri in it. And but they didn't. So,
But yeah, there's one of those things where it just works its way through, I guess.
what are some of the medications that have been developed using snake venom? Because we've been talking about what we are working on now, but what have we already accomplished?
ACE
Yeah, the
inhibitors.
biggest one is probably ACE inhibitors, which of course are not made from venom now, but initially that was discovered in Bothrop-Siraca.
Testing for lupus uses Russell's viper venom, and we provide that for the whole United States and Canada.
People may be aware of actually the Malayan, we were talking about Malayan pit vipers. That drug is kind of not, it's kind of stopped being made and then maybe repurposed. It's had a couple of different names over the years, but I think Ancrod was one of the earliest names. So that was a stroke drug. And I haven't read much about that recently, so I don't know exactly what the status is of that right now. There's actually Bothrop's Asper venom. So that's Terciopelo, or it's got a bunch of common names, but the Central American one. Their blood, or their blood, their venom is used to make blood test vials in Japan. So here, if you give blood, they put it in a heparinized tube because they don't want it to clot. But the way they do it in Japan is they actually want it to clot right away. And so they actually are using Bothrop's Asper venom to coat the inside of those vials as opposed to heparin. It's interesting. I mean, I'm sure most people are aware of the whole Ozempic stuff. Probably don't need to explain that. Though that's changed a bit over time as this use. I don't know. I guess that might still be up for debate if that's really a big success or not. Certainly.
It was for type 2 diabetes
Originally.
initially, and it's made it harder for people with type 2 diabetes to get it because they want it for weight loss and they can make more money that way. So
Well, and it has some issues as well as
yeah,
they're
it's
coming out with
very,
the wider use of it.
as the use is being, you probably know, it's very similar to binding you up as an opiate does. So if you use it for any amount of time, you can end
Well,
up with issues.
there's a
Yeah,
bunch of
a whole
things
bunch of
with
side
it.
effects.
What is your opinion on so-called self-immunizers?
It's not a good
It's
idea.
not a good idea. The risks outweigh the benefits. To give you a basic rundown, the guys who do it overmilk the snakes, so never are they going to take a lethal injection, probably. And we don't even know what a lethal injection is,
It
because
almost
it's estimated
doesn't even
advice.
matter because they don't know what else it's doing to them.
Right.
I think that's really the
If
thing.
you notice, most of them have some shivers to them. They've done neurological damage to themselves. I don't want to mention names, but I know they look like crackheads, a lot of them.
I mean, that's not a very nice thing to say, but it is probably true. I think when we have had interactions with them questioning what they're doing, their response towards us has always been personal attacks. It has never
Well, of
been,
course, because they don't have any
well,
science to base their claims
So
on.
that's my point. Like, if you know, and there is a guy trying to do science now, if it meets your definition of science, I don't know, but I'm not going to say that it'll never possibly be any good, but the problem is all of the data that exists up until now, at least everything that I've seen, is not something that would ever be useful in truly giving it under a medical circumstance because it isn't scientific enough to do. There's no way to take that and apply it to an FDA license or anything like
You're
that.
not going to be able
So
to ship human
you can't.
blood to another country.
No,
You know,
it's
it's
just.
hard enough to ship it in the United States. You're
And
shipping it to another country as an antidote. And
It will, and we
even if
were
it
just
was, with all the new anti-serum
exactly.
stuff coming
Yeah,
out,
the stuff we were just
we're
mentioning.
beyond that. And when they did the immunizations, they always called up the Ryukyu Island thing when they did it with the Habu and all this stuff. And also when they did it with Du Bois simonensis in Indonesia. And they leave out the most important thing. They found no difference between the person who was not immunized and the person who was immunized as far as survivorship or loss of tissue.
I mean, there's really no way you could do that as an experiment because you would be putting people in harm's risk, which is completely against IRB standards. You would have to say, well, here is our control group, people who are just going to get bit without self-immunizing. I mean, and I can guarantee you there probably are people out there who are stupid enough that they would do it.
For sure. But it isn't
They're all on
ethical to
YouTube.
do. There's no way you could ever
Well,
do
that's
that
the problem with the new
officially.
anti-serum and stuff, with when they were testing Crofab and when they were testing anti-vitamin. Who do you give it to and who you don't give it to?
Well, that's the case with like Vereclidib. I
Oh,
don't
yeah.
know if you're familiar with that, but Vereclidib is a repurposed drug, and already has good safety data behind it. and is now being looked at as a type of not a replacement for antivenom, but a way to prolong the time that you need to get antivenom. And it's a PLA2 inhibitor. So many snake toxins are PLA2s. Vorasplatib just kind of generically inhibits them. And the way that they're doing the trials is that you are given, if you're in the experimental group, the placebo is just you still get antivenom. I said that wrong. The arms are you either get antivenom and vorasplatib, because obviously you have to still give antivenom to be ethical, but you can get antivenom and vorasplatib. So seeing whether or not that drug is doing a lot of good is very difficult, because we already know that antivenom does work. And so it's just trying to tease out, like, oh, is it helping it some? And so that's a very difficult thing to demonstrate, but that's the only ethical way to test it.
And you don't know how the body is going to react because everyone's body reacts differently to the venom and the anti-venom.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, like with Dingo, my understanding is it wasn't the actual snake bite that killed him, it was the
That's,
anaphylaxis that he suffered from being allergic after being around venom for so long. So after that, I went
I
to my
see.
doctor like the next day and told them I need a prescription for EpiPens right away.
Yeah, we do too.
Yeah, we
Yeah, I mean, you
you
because
got
that's
to be.
exactly it. You don't know if you've developed a
And you probably
sensitivity.
know because I went over it with you, but for the people that are listening, if you have an EpiPen, you need to know how to use it and when to give it.
Yeah, don't
Because
just give it for a
you
snake
can
bite.
send somebody into
No.
cardiac arrest, you know, giving them adrenaline. Well, you don't, there's, I've been hearing this a lot again recently, and you don't do this. You don't pre-test for sensitivity, not for anti-serum and not for down the line, am I going to be allergic to a snake bite? Because then you have sensitized yourself. And it also gives you a false positive reading half the time. So, you know, it you don't do any of that stuff. You treat what's in front of you at the moment. And every bite's different because you have no idea how much venom's injected each time. And studies, there have been one study came out where somebody claimed there's no such thing as dry bites. And I'm like, how do you know that? He says, well, I got all the documentation from the hospital. I said, those are people who showed up at the hospital. If they didn't have symptoms, they're not going to show up at the hospital. They're going to pour
I mean,
turpentine on it or
some
wave a
people
dead
might,
chicken.
but a lot of people won't.
Well,
I mean, you might catch me with a tree viper or something like that on a hook. I'm type 1 diabetic, so I'm not going to screw around with. I mean, I have no problem with a little viper on a hook. They don't give me much trouble. They're pretty chill.
Well, the other thing is to give you kind of an idea when she was saying about people coming to the hospital. I worked in the coroner's office when I was 17. I assisted on autopsies when I was 17. And we had a guy come in that supposedly died from a snake bite. And the media was putting it out as a snake bite. And they brought the snake and they showed me the snake. It was a garter snake. Garter snakes are mildly venomous, you know, but they're not of medical importance. I went down, we cracked the guy's chest. His heart was so thick and so heavy. He had a massive coronary because he got bit by a snake and he knew he was gonna. And so he convinced himself he was.
Well, there was just an article recently. I forget
Yeah, I saw it
what
too.
the species was. The woman that
Yeah,
died of fear after
it's
getting
essentially the
bit.
same thing.
King cobras last year, four subspecies now. So, do you think that's going to do anything to the antivenom that we're
Oh,
using?
yeah, we already knew that. I've been telling people for the longest time that you have a better chance using the hemo or the neuropolyvalent because you have a better chance of possibly covering stuff. The tie animal's venom is different than some of the other locale animals. And tie is the Red Cross, that's where it comes from. That's the one manufacturer.
So I think, though, it's important to understand that all antivenoms kind of are that way. Like, even if you have the same exact snake and it bites you, and then you use antivenom, and that horse was inoculated with venom from that snake, you still might not have a totally effective antivenom because the horse or sheep or whatever it is not necessarily going to think that every toxin is as important as your body does. And so the horse may or may not create antibodies for all of the things that really ideally we should have. Now, luckily, the fact that most antivenoms work as well as they do is, kind of a miracle almost. Like we are basically lucky. And I think what happens is our own immune system can help to clear those toxins out as well. So by getting help from antivenom, usually you make it. So yes, it does mean that, maybe there should be additional antivenoms for the other species of kings, but it's almost exactly the same as the situation with different geographic variation, or even just with a venom that isn't very,
And we've
wait, I
used,
haven't finished. What do I need? I want a word.
You want a word?
Yeah, the antigenic. There are some venoms that are less antigenic to horses. So, like soft-scaled vipers, for example. So it hasn't really changed that much, even though we now have new names for them, I guess is what I'm trying to
So
say.
basically what we're saying is it's getting more complex.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's.
Most of the kings in the United States are Bengaris. The Malaysian and Indonesian. There are sporadically out there in collections, possibly, well, there's some Chinese, but we've used the Thai neuro on the ones that are available in the United States, and people have gotten bitten by their pets.
And they didn't die.
And it apparently worked, but it worked as good as a dead chicken over your head, but
Mean, that's the other thing. It's really hard to measure how well it works, right? You either live or not, and even with tissue damage, we don't know how much damage is prevented by antivenom and how much is going to happen anyway. And it's really complicated. But there is, well, okay, so Russell's are another example of this exact same thing, right? Because they used to, back in the day, just be Russell's, and now there are different species. And the antivenom that exists primarily in the US for them is the Thai Red Cross. And so a Thailand Russell's viper is not the same as an Indian Russell's viper, is not the same as an Indonesian Russell's viper. And so, it's sort of the same situation, but kind of the same thing, I think, is what Jim is probably going to say, is to restock the polyvalent as well, because at least that has, not that it has different Russells in it, but the idea being that there are at least a wider variety of toxins in it. And then also there are Indian antivenoms available as well, so which you have to be a little bit careful with some of the manufacturers, but they've improved
They've improved a lot.
as
Back in the
well.
day, you didn't know if you're getting water, if you were actually getting antiseptic from India. You're going to see a lot of countries that are going to have problems and have been problems because of the pandemic had one of the big things. Production of anti-serum. South Africa is one of them. They still have not gotten back up on a regular production. So talk to Mike Perry and talk to, Johan and stuff, and it's just not happening right now because it's not because of that lack of venom. It's from lack of the mechanics, the machinery, the politics. All those things are not good. So it's, the only thing available for Africa right now is INSERP, right?
Yeah, I
I
mean that
think
we can
so.
get. There are some.
Limitations for it.
Yeah, there's both people who really like it, and then there's some other people who have seen maybe not as much efficacy as we would prefer. So different African countries getting people to follow up and stuff is really, really
There was a
challenging.
Seracity's bite recently, and they used almost 20 vials of INSERP. Normally on a Seracity's bite, you need 5 vials. So there is some things going on, and at what point do you correct your coagulopathy issues normally? There's a point where your body will correct them on their own. And so I could give you like 88 vials of Crofab for an adamantius bite, or 100 vials has been given also for an adamantius bite, and you correct all your coags on your own because it's been a long enough period of time. So it there's a lot of issues still need to be addressed, even with our own antisense.
Yeah.
Is there anything you would classify as setbacks with what you currently do?
Well, that's a good question.
Paramyxio. Even when you quarantine, you can miss it. We
Yeah. I
do,
mean, the
we
state
just,
of reptile
we
veterinary
do,
care is,
yeah, it's improved a lot, but
I mean, yeah, we have a great vet, but.
in the day, that was the biggest problem. I mean, Paramyxio showed up in a lab in France, and it was called the Fertilance virus for the longest time because they thought that it's all infected. And elapids, a lot of people say, well, it doesn't affect elapids. Elapids are carriers. If you have an elapid that has it, it could live forever and be shedding it and kill all your pit vipers. So you have to be very careful. We quarantine 6 months and then we do testing.
Testing is so much easier now.
Yeah.
That used to
Yeah.
be really
Yeah.
expensive and difficult, and now it's really easy. I think, when I think of like what were the most difficult things, honestly, I think they're not things often that have to do with snakes. I mean, he's right. Big diseases are obviously challenging to deal with. But it's really difficult for us to have a good cashier. Like, that is a constant worry and aggravation. Even when we do have one that we pretty much like, it's just not the same level of reliability that we think people should have in the world. Like that kind of thing is a lot. I think that's harder to deal with than almost anything else. Like
The business part of it.
the managing people and
To get CITES permits, she has to go through, and she has to go,
Yeah, that's.
Cuthia, she has to go all the way back to my original animals
Yeah, but
that came from Siam.
that's not really a setback. It's annoying.
Yeah. That's true.
But it's not. Yeah, it's just a bit obnoxious to have to do. But I think the hardest things are just the fact that how much of a grind it is, I think. And again, I don't know that that's really a setback either, but it's not like, oh, I get this all set up and then it's just magically going, right? Like every day there's some little thing that you have to do that needs your attention. And I mean that like that's on top of the fact that you got a bunch of dirty animals that need cleaned, or you got to make sure this has water or check the heat there, or whatever. Like the normal animal stuff is kind of what you expect to do, I think. But the kind of day-to-day other aggravations, I think, are at least for me the most challenging to deal with.
I was told when
Yes.
I started by Dr. Menton and a couple other people is that you don't get to be sick because if you're sick, the animals don't get taken care of and nobody gets paid. So you have to work when everybody else is laying on their butt.
And I mean, you try to get good people to surround you, and we do have some great people.
Yeah.
But that is a challenging aspect, I think.
So what do we have? What are you guys looking forward to in the future, such as medical innovation using snake venom, and just for you guys personally and business-wise?
Cancer and
Yeah, definitely that one.
cancer. A couple things being done with different venoms from cancer, including some of the spitting cobras.
Opiate
Opiate
replacement stuff.
replacement using king cobra, black mamba,
There's
and
people who've been working on that for a while, but I
right.
don't think they're at the point of trials yet, but boy, that'd be cool.
Yeah, they did. One of the guys who's doing the research said, well, this would be great because it won't be something you become dependent on. And I'm like, wait a minute. There's psychological dependency and there's physiological dependency. There's always going to be a problem. But yes,
It's a lot different
it's a different
situation.
thing. So that's as far as the medical stuff, that's what we're looking at in new antivenoms. We're looking at if we're a nonprofit, and as you know, it's hard to raise funds for something that's not a cute and cuddly animal. And we're looking at building a eventually, hopefully, this is my hope for the future, is building it in like one of the tubes you walk down through, like with the sharks and all that stuff, and have king cobras and different biomes like the Lachesis biome and the, different stuff like that, and have people be the ones in a cage. And then the animals be
Nice.
pretty much out. We
Yeah.
probably would still have to have one on display someplace where people could actually see it, or they would be upset.
Yeah.
Because if they can't see it immediately,
Right.
but yeah, it's an idea. That's what I would like to do. I don't know what.
No, I think just expanding the exhibit stuff, we've been really talking about it a lot the last couple of years, and there's a lot of logistical things involved with doing that that I have no idea how to do. So, but we've got a, there's an organization. Oh yeah, there's an organization here in Kentucky that actually helps businesses with like business development things that I've just kind of gotten connected with. So, they're going to be helping me kind of learn about that aspect of things, hopefully.
For each of you, do you have a favorite snake or reptile?
No.
I would have thought it was the St. Lucian pit viper.
You might be like a favorite person, but you're, I like everything. I like what's in front of me. I don't think I have a favorite.
I think for me, everybody asks me what's my favorite. I like Bothrops in general. That's why we have so many species of Bothrops. But the snake that I started out extracting from, the first snake I extracted from ever, was king cobras. And so I've always been a big fan of the kings. I know a lot of people look at them because they are forgiving for the most part. But when they don't want to be forgiving, you are in trouble. I mean, they can cover a lot of distance fast, and people don't realize that, or they don't understand the size proportion to what's going to come at you and how that comes across the floor. And people get on their knees with them and stuff like that. And even when I was had good knees and stuff and could do a kip up, there's no way I'd be on a knee with a king. There's no way, because if that king turned on me and got me, I'd be in trouble.
So, Kristen, we're starting to see more females in the reptile world. So, from the female standpoint, what advice do you have for other females wanting to get into the reptile world?
That's a good question. I think, for me personally, like I never really spent much time thinking about my own personal demographics and what they are or are not. And so I tend to not spend a lot of time thinking about that, but I have encountered misogyny for sure in different times. I think that really the only advice I have is to that, you have to just not let it bother you or, and I don't mean like not call it out, but I mean, if someone's trying to stop you from doing something for a stupid reason, then that's a reason to try to do that thing more to me. So I think for the people that kind of thought I didn't know anything or whatever, I mean, I just try to be honest about it. Like, okay, well, there's plenty of things I don't know stuff about, but these few things I do know a lot about. And so believe me or not, but that's what I know,
Well, it kind of seems like Jim is the face of the whole operation,
Yeah.
given all of the snake bites and the news articles surrounding those, in addition to all of the research that goes on. But you're a very integral part of it as a legitimate female keeper within our industry.
I
But
appreciate
again,
that.
it seems like Jim gets more of the glitz and glamour around things.
Actually, I push her in front of the media
Yeah, I
all
have
the
to talk to
time.
the news all the time now.
To be dead honest with you, I'd rather not, nobody knew who I was, and I just did my thing like I used to do.
Yeah.
The problem of being people knowing who you are is it becomes a pain
Then
in the
they
butt.
expect you, yeah. I would say also that there's, around the world and here in the US obviously too, there really are a lot of women
Coming up.
in the like science side of it. Like a lot. And obviously I think that's great, but there, I mean, I can think of many just off the top of my head. And a couple of years ago, at a biology of pit vipers. They're one of the pit vipers. I think it was the most recent biology of the pit vipers. I lose track of them, but they had all the women scientists who were there go up on the stage to like take a group photo, and it was a big group of people.
So before we wrap things up, how can we find you guys in person and on the web?
So in person, we are open starting in March. Typically March through the end of November, maybe more next year, we'll see. Ours will be on our website, which is just KY Reptile Zoo. I think it'll end up being .org again, but we own both .org and .com, so either one will get you to us. We are on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. And you can email us at kyreptilezoo@kyreptilezoo.org.
Well, this has been a fantastic time with Jim Harrison and Kristen Wiley of the Kentucky Reptile Zoo. Guys, thank you for being on with me today, and I hope to be seeing you guys soon at the zoo.
No
Thank
problem.
you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, what a great way to end this two-part set with Jim Harrison and Kristen Wiley of the Kentucky Reptile Zoo. Be sure to check them out on their social media channels and also in person at the Kentucky Reptile Zoo. And next week, we'll be joined by Mr. Joe Pittman. He is a trauma nurse and the founder of the Florida Snake Bite Institute. And over his career, he has assisted in over 500 foreign and domestic snake bites and has written tons and tons of literature on how to deal with snake bite, including his many, many, many protocols on dealing with snakes, spiders, lizards, centipedes, and anything else that has venom.